from a Russian penal colony through a prisoner exchange.
She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home after months of being unjustly detained in Russia.
The deal traded Griner for Russian arms dealer Viktor Bout and capped a months-long ordeal that included the two-time Olympian's detainment, a drug trial, and negotiations that culminated with a dramatic Cold War-style handover in Abu Dhabi. Griner, who played in Russia during the WNBA offseason, was detained at a Moscow-area airport in mid-February for carrying vape cartridges with hashish oil in her luggage, according to Russian officials. On May 3rd, the State Department declared that Griner was being wrongfully detained, putting the weight of the U.S. government behind the campaign for her release.
Brittany Griner should not be detained. She should not be detained for a single day longer.
Welcome to Global Take, America's number one podcast, where we discuss global issues from the Black perspective. It's time for our voices to be at the forefront of foreign policy. This is Alexandria Haidara, your podcast host. Today, we're going to talk to Dr. Nolan Haynes, Georgetown University professor and Truman Fellow. We're going to discuss the Brittany Griner case and the geopolitical shift on global politics as a result of the Ukraine war. Now that China is playing peacemaker, will they have more of a global influence? These questions and more on Global Take.
For joining us again on Global Take, this has been an awesome opportunity for us to talk about, just kind of reflect on Biden's foreign policy as it relates to the African diaspora. We've talked to a couple of experts, and now we're talking to you to kind of focus on the Europe angle, as well as Brittany Griner and some other issues that he dealt with as related to Black folks in America. So just want to get your impression. What did President Biden get right, and what did he get wrong when it came to our foreign policy in the Russian invasion on Ukraine?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy doing this podcast and spending time with you to talk about foreign policy issues. And I must say up front that I am not in any way representing the United States government or the State Department in any way during this. I'm going to start with Brittany Griner. That entire situation, I remember being on Tiffany Cross's show late last year, and we had a very quick conversation about what I thought was happening. And I made a comment that things were moving very fast, and they were, and they did. And when you are welcome into certain spaces the way that I am, and I feel so uniquely grateful professionally that I am invited into spaces, and I had access to information knowing that there were people working on her case around the clock, not just Brittany Griner's case, but, you know, Mr. Whelan, who's still there. And now there is a journalist there now. There are people around the world, there are Americans around the world who are in similar situations. And I know that there are people who do nothing but think about how to bring Americans home. So what Brittany Griner, I can't even begin to imagine. But in terms of speed and efficiency, considering who we were dealing with and the political environment, the geopolitical environment in which the United States was negotiating her release, I think that Brittany got home probably a lot quickly than a lot of people anticipated. And I had the pleasure of talking to, you know, some folks on her team, the team that got her back, and they were just sharing these warm personal stories about that moment, you know, when she realized she was going home. So in that regard, you know, I remember, again, being on Tiffany Cross's show. I keep mentioning her because I miss her so much. You know, the morning the news broke to the world that Brittany was in Russia, detained in Russia. And it was such an emotional moment. And I think the panel was all Black. It was me, I think Dr. Jason Johnson, Sasha Brown. And I just remember that moment, like being frozen, thinking political. Secondly, you were talking about a queer Black woman who's almost 7 feet tall, you know? So like she has all of these things where she stands out. And I just got so worried for a person that I've never met in a way that I just connected with her story. And I've written op-eds about it, you know, in terms of misinformation and disinformation, the way in which the Black community was targeted specifically on social media about her case, convincing a lot of folks in our community that the Biden-Harris administration didn't care about her, which was so untrue and hurtful for a lot of people that were working 24/7 on getting her home, along with other many other Americans. So, you know, I say all this to say that having somewhat of a unique perspective and being brought in to see some of the pieces, not all of it, not in any, I'm not trying to, I definitely was not like involved, you know, in any of it, but just in terms of the information piece and being able to talk to the people that were actually.
Reiner's arrest in the early days of the Russian invasion against Ukraine, high-level celebrities, social media, WNBA fans were worried that Ms. Reiner would never get back home. She would be stuck in Russia and that the U.S. government was not doing enough. NBA giant LeBron James was quite vocal on her arrest. His views only mirrored what most Black Americans were saying behind closed doors, at the dinner table, at the barbershop, about her imprisonment and the possibility of her return.
I don't know how many of them followed the Brittany Griner situation. Has everybody followed that?
No.
So there's a woman named Brittany Griner. She was an amazing basketball player, amazing person. She was in Russia playing. The war broke out. On her way back flying home, they said she had some amount of hash, which was illegal in Russia. And she is in Russia. We don't really know where. She's been there.
Over 110
days. Yeah, or something like that. It's pretty fucked up what's going on.
The WNBA season has started, and she still
has not come back.
She still hasn't come back.
She's a superstar.
Superstar. I mean,
we're talking about this is the top of the top. This is LeBron of the WNBA.
You, being you, LeBron James, have you thought of, like, what, like, if it was you, you travel to Europe, you do these things, like, have you put yourself there in terms of, like, man, what she must be going through, or what that experience must be like?
I was trying to imagine it, and it's hard for me to even put myself into what she's going through. Like, she's such a great human being, a great person. Obviously, I've been in her presence a few times, and, you know, you always feel like, you know, if you're from a certain place, you always feel like they got your back. And in a sense, like, now, how can she feel like America has her back? Like, I would be feeling like, do I even want to go back to America if I've been gone over 130 days and I feel like it's been zero effort?
I'm able to talk about it not from an outsider's view, in that this is what I think. I'm speaking from what I know. And in that regard, the Biden-Harris administration heard us speaking very loudly from behind the scenes.
And yeah, do you feel like they were justified, or do you feel like if it wasn't like raised the way it was in the Black community, that maybe this would have taken a little bit longer than expected?
Do I think it took too long? The reality of foreign policy. I think that people think that Americans could just go into another country and take what you want. You know, we were literally dealing with, I think at this point, you know, I with a country, I think that the best way to put it is an acute threat, you know, to the safety of the United States and the world writ large. You were trying to negotiate with a country who not once, but twice illegally invaded another country. So I understand the emotionality behind it, because I had all the things, I had all the emotions, right? And oftentimes I wonder sometimes, you know, we'd be done in a briefing or a meeting and I'm like, okay, did I go too far? You know, the reality of foreign policy, the reality of security work does not happen overnight. And I would like to say, you know, it's the same people who wake up to be Monday morning quarterbacks. We can scream and yell about what they should have done on the field, but we're not in those positions to actually be there to speak on it, right? So I get the emotionality, but keep in mind also when she got home, that still wasn't enough because people were still up at arms for who she was traded for. So people in the community that the administration wasn't moving fast enough a few years anyway. So you kind of have to tune some of that stuff out, because if you lean too far into what others are saying who have no knowledge of what's actually happening literally in the field, you can't let that interrupt and disrupt your flow and your work. You cannot let that get into your head. You have to focus on the job in front of you and get it done. And I think that the Biden-Harris administration got it done. And we still have a lot of Americans and other countries that need to come home, including Mr. Whelan.
Yes. Yes. Because at one point I was like, she's going to be there for 10 years. And I was crying. Like, I was feeling like this is not going to, I mean, because at one point I was thinking like, will America bend over backwards to save a Black woman, to save a queer woman? Will we bend over backwards? Were we going to go full stop on everything we needed to do to get this done, especially when her wife appeared on national TV and complained about, you know, just the lack of communication and, you know, trying to get support from the administration. So I was really shocked that she came back. I was happy, but it was interesting just that whole process, because it was getting really big, especially in Black media, on this topic. And now she's writing a book. So what's your take on this?
I mean, it's absolutely within itself. Exactly. It's cathartic. I completely understand that move. And, you know, I just want to say, you know, one thing. Brittany's case was a very unusual case. You know, first and foremost, this is State Department peer view, right? The President of the United States usually does not wade into negotiations regarding Americans. That's not so for the president to put the weight of the entire United States government behind her case speaks to who Brittany is, what she meant, what she means, and for the simple fact, I cannot discount how important it is to have people in the room. I know that people say that as a throwaway sentiment or statement, but it's not. Because one of the ways in which I found myself invited into some of these spaces was the way that I pay attention to misinformation and disinformation, just from, you know, a security perspective. And I hated what it was doing to the Black community, and it was intentional. It was intentional targeting. And that's what I was constantly reminding folks of. Like, listen, you need to understand the fever pitch to where this is, right? So I feel like there were a lot of Black women like, what are we doing after this? But, you know, the book, I think it makes sense. You know, it's cathartic. And also I'm like, Brittany, get your coins. Everybody's going to want to read that book. I think she has a tremendous story to tell. And from what I understand, she has the best disposition on the planet, that she's just grateful to be home with her wife and to be safe. And so I think that she will probably speak to that, you know, that kind of inner light that she has. And I think that we kind of need that a little bit, you know, although she went through a horrible ordeal, from what I understand, she's just that hasn't dimmed her inner light, her inner glow.
Yeah.
And so
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely amazing. Speaks to how special she is a human being. So I have a feeling that probably some of that will show up in the book, and we need a little bit of that right now.
For sure. And so, okay, all right. So Biden did good on that. We'll give him an A+ on the Brittany Griner case. When it comes to like, just, you know, just the influence of Secretary Austin, you know, with him being the first Secretary of Defense, like how much influence do you feel like he's had on you, on the direction of our Ukraine policy? And are we moving into World War III? Because it is getting scary out here. especially with China and Taiwan, and now we have Ukraine and Russia. I mean, this is really scary looking at these two proxy wars, if you will.
I completely understand. And I'm going to push back a little bit on the idea of it being a proxy war. I've definitely seen that language, and I'm going to tell you why. Proxy wars have a level of clandestine movement to it. And since day one, in my personal opinion, the administration has been pretty transparent about what's happening, you know, even to its own detriment, you know, telling us with the security packages that we're sending to Ukraine, you know, when we have tons of domestic issues that we need to figure out at home, you know, that could be, you know, secret or classified information, but they've been completely transparent with that. And the level of fear, trust me, I completely understand. I understand how everything looks like, you know, we're on the brink of all things. We're on the brink of climate crisis. We're on the brink of world war. You know, we're on the brink of race war, you know, here in the United States. Everything just seems so, everything feels uncertain, right? There is this level of uncertainty in the air. In terms of SecDef, I think that the way in which he has rallied the international community and kept the international community together, that's no small feat. I can tell you, first, as an academic, as an international relations person, you know, many students over the years have always questioned, why do we even have, you know, international institutions? Like, what does NATO even do? What is it needed for? What does the UN do? What is it needed for? And I think in this Ukraine-Russia situation, we saw that engine built after World War II rear up, you know, in the best sense, in that there's been cooperation and coalition building. Now, what I will say is we are definitely in a time of realignment on all fronts, realignment in terms of superpowers repositioning, you know, Russia's status after this, who knows, you know, will Russia be nearly, you know, China's colony in a sense, you know?
Well, meanwhile, Russia's Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin is due to meet China's President Xi Jinping. It's part of a two-day visit to Beijing. The two nations have ramped up economic and diplomatic cooperation, with ties growing closer since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Well, let's bring in Katrina Yu. She's across this for us in Beijing. Katrina, I believe that meeting is due to happen any minute now. It's a real reflection of how friendly things have become.
Right, so Mikhail Mishustin arrived in Beijing earlier today on Wednesday. He was certainly greeted like an old friend, even though this is his first time in China as Russia's prime minister. He met earlier today with Premier Li Qiang and other Chinese officials, and he's due to meet very shortly with Xi Jinping. Now, President Xi sees Russia's friendship and partnership as very important strategically. As he describes it, China is locked in an ideological battle with the West, and he needs Putin's support because of that. And partly because of this, we've seen Mishustin, while he's been here, say that China-Russia ties are at unprecedented levels. Now, he's here, of course, to deepen economic cooperation with Beijing, and earlier today with Chinese officials, he signed some agreements extending.
Well, you know, there are different ways to be colonized. You know, there's the physical sense, where you can physically go in and you fight a war, and then you oppress and suppress the people and you put them at the bottom of the totem pole. Or it can be through economic levers. And in this sense, which some people will probably call it neocolonialism, in this sense, Russia needs the assistance of China. And I think China has played their cards well in that they waited a while to see what was going to happen. And right now, where Russia is, as a former empire, as a former superpower, you know, they are going to be beholden to China in a way that I don't think Vladimir Putin thought when he sought out to invade Ukraine. He thought Ukraine was going to be over with in 3-4 days, and here we are.
You know, it was going to be a wrap, right?
Exactly. So Russia's frozen out of the kind of global economic system, their supply chain, a myriad of problems, their workforce problems. There are military military problems, not just from strategy, but from actual physical capabilities, from the actual military force itself to weaponry. And, you know, who's going to help them out? You know, China's going to help them out. And so it'll be very interesting to see where Russia ends up at the end of this. So that's what I meant by that. You know, it wouldn't be a situation where I think, you know, time would be turned into Chinese Red Square. It would be more of economic stranglehold that China has over Russia.
And that does it for us on Global Take, where we discuss global issues from the Black perspective. If you enjoyed this episode, please like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. You can find us at Black Professionals and International Affairs at www.iabpia.org. You can also find all podcasts on Spotify as well as Apple Podcasts. So please like and leave a comment. Thank you.